Lights, camera, action. It is January 13th, 2015. There you go.
Well, to recapitulate briefly, we have talked about a monograph that I wrote entitled Fields of Bondage, which, as the title suggests, was essentially a cry for a new abolition movement because I viewed the Bracero system as a form of slavery. And this apparently went over well in some liberal democratic quarters, and it was used by certain liberal democratic representatives in the Congress to help bring about a vote on the 29th of May, in which an attempt to get the Bracero program extended until December 31st of 1964 was defeated, meaning that the program would die in 1963. And this, the thought that I had made some difference in this process got my juices flowing, and I started thinking of other ways in which I might make myself useful. It wasn't easy because I still had a full-time job with the Public Health Department in something called the Medical Care Studies Unit. But at that time, this unit was kind of treading water, looking for something to do under the leadership of Dr. Lester Brazo. And he didn't really have his ducks lined up on the very bold, creative courses which came later. So we were just mostly finishing up odds and ends of research by local health departments and other things. Not very important. And so I didn't have to devote an awful lot of time to them. At this point, I was living in Martinez. On the 7th of May, my number three son, Eugene, was born. And eighth, sorry. So I had to spend a good deal of time driving back and forth. But in one way or another, I embarked on what I think I would call my personal golden age of productivity. One of the things which occurred to me was to offer my services, if that's the word, to Berkeley's listener-supported FM station, KPFA. I may have mentioned it before, but it was something of a local institution and was always on the liberal side of things, and I thought that KPFA ought to be interested in the farm labor movement. And so I went to the director of the public affairs department of KPFA. The whole station was managed by a man named Trevor Thomas, who had become him, a friend of mine, when I was with AWOC, because his job at that time was as a lobbyist for the Friends Committee on Legislation in Sacramento, and he and I talked about the possibility of getting farm labor legislation passed, which it didn't, but that's another story. So anyway, I didn't go to Trevor Thomas with my ideas. I went to the director of public affairs, who was a woman named Elsa Knight Thompson. And I didn't know anything about the personalities at that time, but she was a formidable woman. Chain smoked, which, as far as I know, nobody else in the whole station did, but she was a law unto herself. And she was a tough cookie. She wanted me to make a couple of test tapes of the sort of thing I had in mind. And so I worked on those. For several weeks. I came up with one which was a broadside on the subject of the Giannini Foundation, which was a kind of think tank on the Berkeley campus, established by A.P. Giannini, who was the founder of the Bank of America and had given all this money to the university, and they had set up this, it's, they didn't call it a think tank in those days, but in practice it took as its function advocacy for agriculture and agricultural employers. And so I wrote this commentary, which was going to be an expose of the Giannini Foundation being cat's paw, a tool of one particular industry, whereas the university was supposed to be open to various points of view. And I named names. That was going to be one of my test tapes for Elsa Knight Thompson. Another one was based upon the vote of the House of Representatives for the termination of the Bracero program. And I was going to call this particular commentary Beyond the Bracero System. And I talked about what the employers would need to do to re-attract the people who had formerly done exactly the same work that Braceros were now being used. Because those people mostly still lived in the shack towns around places like Stockton and Fresno and so forth. And we knew from one of the exercises that we did during the volunteer period of AWOL, went around and did a survey of these fellows who were former farm workers and asked them, what would it take to get you back to do the jobs that you used to do? And we found that on average, $1.25 an hour would be enough. And so I talked about these sorts of things that the growers would have to do in order to get their crops in without Braceros. Well, I had played these, or I guess my friend Ernest Lowe, who was on the staff of KPFA, played them for her. And when she called me back in with her decision, she said that the one on the Giannini Foundation was libelous, and that she could not allow that to be broadcast, but that the other one would be okay. So, I can't recall exactly when, but it was broadcast probably late in July. At that time, it was not thought of by myself or by anybody else as the first in a series. Because KPFA had what they called a nightly commentary every weeknight at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, I can't remember the exact hour. But commentators were given 15 minutes to talk about their favorite subject. And they had a spectrum. They had a guy named Caspar Weinberger, who was a Republican, and I think he was on the faculty at San Francisco State at the time. And he was willing to appear on KPFA, even though KPFA had a reputation of being ultra-liberal. Well, part of its liberalism was that they wanted all different kinds of points of view. On the other side of the spectrum, the California regional director of the Communist Party was one of KPFA's regular commentators. They had somebody from the Socialist Party. They had somebody from the single tax movement. If anybody today remembers that, and that the time we're talking about, 1963, not very many people then knew what the heck he was talking about. But it was a big social movement at one time, and this old fellow was still hanging on. So anyway, as I say, at that time, it didn't occur to me that I might be as part of that panoply of commentators. And in fact, later on, I did become one, but not quite then. Well, another idea that occurred to me during this summer was that in August, there was going to be a street fair on Telegraph Avenue near the campus. With all kinds of exhibits by artisans and artists. And I signed up for a group of paintings by myself on the subject of farm workers. And so I had to work on those. I had been doing paintings relevant from time to time in the past. So I wasn't having to start from scratch. But I did have to produce a few new ones to round out a group of about a dozen paintings. And that street fair lasted for a week. And I had some handouts to anybody that was interested in the subject regarding the farm labor situation. I can't recall whether I had prices on any of these. All I know is that I didn't sell any. Well, in September, oh, wait a minute. I don't want to skip this. On August 22nd, there was a signal event in Washington, D.C. called the March on Washington, at which the principal speaker was M.L. King Jr. With his speech on I Have a Dream. And I found a friend who had a TV set, and I don't think I had one at that time. And that speech had me bawling like a baby. I will never forget that. On September 17th, in a little town in the Salinas Valley called Chualar, a flatbed truck owned by one of the lettuce growers in the area had been converted into a conveyance for braceros by installing some benches. And the truck was packed on its way to a field and drove into the path of an oncoming freight train. And 32 braceros were killed, and some large number injured seriously. Under the international agreement between Mexico and the United States, the death benefit provided for any bracero who was killed or died from sickness while in the United States was entitled to a death benefit of $1,000. Well, now this episode really got my juices going. And so I wrote another commentary, again, not part of the Friday evening commentary series, but as a special case. I called it Blood on the Lettuce. And Nelson Knight Thompson worked that into the schedule somehow around. And it was received well by the people who heard it, I think. It was received well by the people at KPFA themselves. It was rather more hard-hitting than what they were getting from their other commentators. Well, the ideas kept flowing. And it occurred to me that there was no organization, at least not in Northern California, which advocated for farm workers to the general public. AWOC still existed in a sort of skeletal form. Cesar Chavez was down in the Delano area with a new type of organization, which he called the Farm Workers Association. He deliberately avoided using the term union at that time. There was something in Los Angeles called the Emergency Committee to Aid Farm Workers, which was started with a grant of $50,000 from a well-to-do liberal in that area, so that they were even able to pay their executive secretary. In fact, they made feelers, let's put it that way, which led me to think that they would consider hiring me as their executive secretary if I were willing to move to Los Angeles, which of course I wasn't. But I did feel the need for something like that committee, which would serve to lobby if necessary, or to just inform the public with speeches and writings. And so I talked to some of my friends about the possibility of starting a citizens group in the Bay Area. And on the 2nd of October, we met in the home of Ernest Lowe, my friend from KPFA, and we did in fact start the group, and we even gave it a name. We called it Citizens for Farm Labor, and we elected a chairman and a secretary. And we decided to try to put out a monthly magazine. We would try to hold monthly membership meetings once people started joining. And we talked about the possibility of my continuing to produce commentaries about farm labor and offer them to KPFA as part of their regular Friday evening series. Well, I was still spooked by my experience as having been elected to something at Pali High, but nobody else was willing to step up to the chairmanship of Citizens for Farm Labor, and so therefore I did it because I had to, if there was to be any organization at all. Our secretary was a young lady named Wendy Gopal, who had just graduated from Stanford, and was very, very attractive, but also very, very dedicated. And she and I, between the two of us, put out the magazine practically single-handed at the beginning. I put in a lot of time at night, which didn't make my wife out in Martinez too happy. But I typed stencils and did so with the typewriters in the health department, which didn't make Lester Breslow too happy, because he caught me one evening at work on the magazine, and I couldn't very well claim I was doing state business. So he told me to be careful, but he didn't come right out and say I couldn't continue to use the typewriter, and so I did. Later on, I went too far and allowed you and Stephen to use some of the machines there. And I was then ordered not to continue using them in the evenings. And I had to start using a manual typewriter, and the quality of our stencils went downhill. But anyway, in the latter part of October, we came out with volume one, number one of Farm Labor magazine, which had an article by Wendy herself on the subject of the use of parathion in the peach harvest, and my script for Beyond the Bracero System was reproduced. And one way or the other, we got a magazine of some 40 pages, all mimeographed and stapled with a few photographs, and sent out 300 initial copies to people that we thought might be interested in subscribing and joining the organization itself. So, those were rather heady times. And a few days later, on October 31st, Halloween, the House of Representatives revisited the subject of Public Law 78, the enabling legislation for the Bracero program. I said, there are ways, I don't know exactly how they do it, but they are able to call back something that has already been voted on if they get enough signatures on a petition or something of that sort. And lo and behold, the vote was almost exactly the reverse of what it had been back in May. At that time, the extension of Public Law 78 was voted down 156 to 174, something like that. And on Halloween, the vote was 173 or 4 in favor of extending the program, and only 156 or so against. So it was extended until December 31st of 1964. And I was really, really unhappy because the swing votes were Democrats. Most of them liberal Democrats. They made the difference. And I promptly sat down and wrote a really scathing commentary called "The Liberals Will Get You If You Don't Watch Out," which was a takeoff on a popular poem by James Whitcomb Riley, which nobody remembers now, but at that time Riley was very popular. As it happens, it wasn't my time of month to do this commentary, but I did it in November, and I rather regret it now because I have somewhat mellowed, and I don't think liberals are all bad.
What states were the swing votes from?
Mostly California.
And did you ever unravel what lobbying activities had brought about that change?
No. Well, I don't think that lobbying was necessary. I think that these guys, they were mostly from the San Joaquin Valley, and they were able to count the votes in their districts. The lobbying, which must have taken place, probably came from their local constituents who were engaged in agriculture, including the whole periphery of sellers of farm equipment and fertilizer and pesticides and so forth. They were all dependent upon the health of their local agriculture, and if they all get into a letter writing campaign, can make a lot more difference than a diatribe by me from Berkeley. They don't give a damn about liberals in Berkeley. So I think that's must be what happened. But this was a rather intemperate commentary, I must admit. But KPFA never censored me once I began that series. There was the very early experience with Elsa Knight Thompson and the Giannini Foundation, but at least I never again personally attacked somebody like one of the so-called professors at the Giannini Foundation. Well, in November, another extremely important event took place outside of the Bay Area and outside the subject of farm labor. And that was November 22nd, which was a Friday. And as it happens, at 10 o'clock in the morning, Wendy Gopal and I were taking a coffee break together to talk about the forthcoming issue of farm labor. And somebody came in to say the president had been shot. And the head of the Farm Worker Health Services, which is where Wendy Gopal worked at that time, was close by. And we asked him, "Do you think it's serious?" Well, he didn't know, of course. But according to the early reports, it had been a head wound. And so he said it could be very serious indeed. And so it was. Probably about half an hour later, the word came from Walter Cronkite that the president was dead. At the time, we were too stunned to think about the possible consequences of the vice president, Lyndon Johnson, taking over. What might the effects be on the population group of most interest to us? In fact, a little bit later, when I had time to get my thoughts together, I learned that Johnson himself had hired braceros on his ranch in Texas, and I feared the worst. But if I had only waited a little bit longer, I would have found that Johnson was a good deal more liberal in many ways than Kennedy had ever been. As it happened, that afternoon I picked up Stephen, David, and Rachel because it was their weekend to visit. And we went out to Martinez, and I played the funeral march from Beethoven's Eroica Symphony on our phonograph. And David was very impressed by that. I still remember what he said. He said he must have worked very hard on that. Well, anyway. I continued commentaries on the general subject of farm labor. I worked it into things such as the period around December 11th, which was my day on the air. It was in the middle of Human Rights Week. In recognition of the International Declaration of Human Rights, which had been passed largely through the efforts of Eleanor Roosevelt. And I went down that list of rights to comment upon the extent to which they were or were not honored in the case of agricultural workers. And on January 8th, another one of my dates, my commentary consisted of an open letter to the governor of California, Governor Edmund G. Brown, Sr., asking him to call a special session of the legislature, which he had within his power, to consider the forthcoming end of the Bracero program and what California could and should be doing to develop a domestic farm labor force. The magazine was coming out. Well, by about the third issue, we had to start fudging on the concept of a magazine every month. We put out a double issue covering 2 months. In February, I I commented upon a photographic exhibit in San Francisco called The Bitter Years, and it pulled together a couple of hundred photos that had been taken in the 1930s by a group of professional photographers who were hired for, maybe they were part of a WPA, I don't know where the funding came from exactly, but they were given broad freedom to go out and photograph rural America, and it included a number of very good photographers, one of whom later became very well known, and her name was Dorothea Lange. I was particularly impressed by her contributions to this large exhibit. And so I commented upon the whole thing, and I gave my commentary the title, The Bitter Years Go On, because I said in so many words that if you go out into the hinterlands of California, you will see conditions still very much as deplorable as they were in the 1930s. And I named Dorothea Lange as one of the photographers who was able to get to reach the heartstrings of the viewer more effectively than any of the others. Well, a few days later, I got a letter from Dorothea Lange inviting me to have lunch with her and talk about our mutual interests. I might mention that Dorothea was married to a professor named Paul Taylor, who was kind of the grand old man of farm labor research, dating all the way back to the 1920s. And he knew me because of the fact he had been on my advisory committee during my ill-fated Prosero study for the university. So everything seemed to be falling together, and I called the number that Dorothea suggested I used to line up a time for this lunch. And I found that she and her husband live in a wonderful rambling. A spread out brown shingle in the Berkeley Hills, built around an oak tree in the middle of it. It's all very, very picturesque, very picturesque. Well, I can't remember. And anything that I might have said at this meeting, I was so tongue-tied, more than usually tongue-tied, let's put it that way. I didn't call her Dorothea, but she showed me her dark room and process. Just very memorable. And of course, I followed her career even more carefully after that than I had before, and she became something of an icon. By the time of her death, she she was not well. During the time that I spent with her, she was suffering from cancer, and the chemotherapy made her hair fall out, and so she wore a turban or something of that sort. And she was weak and she moved slowly, but she was certainly mentally alert as ever. So anyway, that was a peak experience of mine. To use a phrase from Abraham Maslow, a humanistic psychologist, I think I'm going to terminate at the present time because in April of 1964, there was a sea change, in which for the first time I deviated from the subject of farm labor in my commentary series. And I deviated very far. After which there was no turning back. I spent the remainder of my time at KPFA, which went on for nearly another 10 years. But I hardly ever talked about farm labor from that point on. So, if there are any questions on anything I've said so far, we have a few more minutes.
What did you talk about? What was the deviation? Or are you going to get to that next time?
I'm going to leave them asking for more.
Was it Vietnam related?
Pardon me?
No, I'm just guessing.
No.
Gene?
Do you have memories of Martinez?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very clear memories. Well, and also we made that whole movie
yeah,
on the hillside above there.
Aside from that.
I remember the Little League Baseball Stadium that was down in the town.
Oh, yes.
Mm-mm. the Eroica Symphony. Maybe if he played the Chopin Funeral March, I might have been more enthusiastic.
Oh, you were enthusiastic.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Huh. I'll have to give it a listen. Okay, that's all for today.